All right, and welcome everyone to the RSP Cast. I am Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is RSP Cast number 32. And you know, I couldn't think of a more appropriate guest to have on for number 32 as a fellow Clevelander is Mr. Dane Brugler from The Athletic, who has worked at, you know, CBS, has worked at an NFL Draft Scout, and, you know, has his own draft guide, who has done tremendous work covering the NFL draft with, you know, his evaluation of prospects over the years. And, you know, this is going to be a fun conversation today to talk, shop with a colleague. So, Dane, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
Well, of course. Anytime I get the chance to talk with you, I always enjoy it. I always come away, you know, feeling like either I learned something, or I thought to myself, you always make me think when we talk, whether it's theoretically, about scouting, or, just different topics. So I'm excited to have this conversation and just kind of see where it leads us.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the same with me. And I know that, you know, we have a mutual friend in common in the Houston area who I know that when I get a chance to talk to him on occasion, who had recently gotten married, I believe in this past spring, who always has lots of, just has a lot of admiration for the work that you do. And he works in football and has a lot to say about what's going on, in this kind of world that we're in. So, it's always a pleasure to have you on and to get to learn the same. So, with that in mind, though, one thing I've never asked you, and it's the one that I think a lot of people ask, but I'm just curious, is how you got started in all of this.
Well, and I kind of touched on this a little bit in my introductory article with The Athletic, just kind of how I got, how my passion was developed for scouting and how I went about it. It's tough because, I get questions all the time from guys coming up through the business, or kids as early as high school saying, I want to do this. What do I do? And I use a similar line. If you want to be a lawyer, you go to law school. If you want to be a doctor, you go to medical school. If you want to be a scout, an evaluator, something involved with football in that respect, it's just, there's no clear path. You kind of have to create your own path, and there are different ways to do it. And for me, I looked at my options, and I thought, the best way, I'm not going to bank on doing this. The draft's my passion, and to move it back even further, I was a baseball guy growing up. That was my passion as a kid. And then when the Browns, being from Northeast Ohio, when the Browns came back to the league in 1999 and had the number one overall pick, I became just infatuated with the draft. And, okay, what made Tim Couch different than Donovan McNabb or Akili Smith? Or, what about the running backs of Ricky Williams? And there was, so much conjecture about who should be the top pick for the Browns, and I became enamored with the process, what makes a college player a good pro, and not just watching the draft, but the process of what it takes. And so, going through high school and then trying to figure out, okay, this is what I want to do. And so I went to Mount Union because they had a really good sport management program, really good football program. And that was a big part of, big step in my scouting education. And, I thought to myself, I'll do my best to put myself in situations where I can learn, network, and get better, and I'll see where it takes me. And, I think that's what I did. By going to Mount Union, I worked for the football team and the sports information department. And so when,
Cecil
my senior
Shorts.
Year, well, it was, Cecil was actually a redshirt freshman. My senior year, it was Pierre Garçon that was a senior. We were seniors together, and so we had scouts coming through. We probably had 20 some teams represented that season. And I was, a big part of my job was to kind of make sure that they got what they needed during their visit to Alliance, whether it was during the week just to check out practice on their way to Ohio State or a bigger game, or if they did stay for the game on Saturday to check out how Pierre did against Ohio Northern or John Carroll or whatever. It was my job to make sure that they were taken care of. And that was the first time I had a chance to sit down, talk with scouts, network. I'm still friends with several of those guys that I met back then. And that was the start of my scouting education. Not to mention just being around the Mount Union program, Division III powerhouse for a lot of years, learning from everything I could there. From there, this is the long version.
No, this is good there, because we got time. Don't ever apologize for length in the show. You're good.
that's the beauty of a podcast, right?
Right.
From there, scouting was always my passion, but it was always, I had the understanding it wasn't the most realistic thing to, really pursue, just because there's only so many jobs. And from, my dad's not a head coach in the league, or I'm not related to, it's hard to break in. And so my thing was always, okay, sports PR is my plan B. And so after college, I moved to Texas and I was the PR guy for a minor league baseball team. And from there I did PR for the Super Bowl, for the Final Four. So a lot of different projects, but all the while I was working on my draft guide. I thought this is my resume. This is what I'm going to, show to NFL teams. Instead of just a one-page resume, this is what I'm going to show that says, hey, I know what I'm talking about. Or at the very least, hey, I love this much that I'm going to produce this, 300-page document in finite detail of what I see. And, maybe I'm not, at this time I'm in college or just out of college. Maybe I'm not right about everything, but the fact that I'm putting in the time and the effort, the importance of self-evaluation and learning and getting better each year. I mean, hopefully that showed through with my draft guide. And, I still do the draft guide. Obviously it's something that, last year, I sold over 5,000 copies. People really enjoy it. And, that's been great to see. But getting started, that was really the kind of the gateway. And, Rob Rang took notice of it, and they hired me an NFL draft scout, then with CBS. Some NFL teams took notice. There are five teams that requested every year. When I was my senior year, it got me an interview with the Green Bay Packers, and that was a lot of fun because I, sitting in a room with John Dorsey, Reggie McKenzie, Schneider, a lot of these future GMs, that allowed me to create more and network more. And that was my first introduction to John Dorsey, who I've stayed close with over the years. Just learning, having those relationships and learning, and that's so imperative to this business. And it's really helped me in my scouting education and moving up. And then I think the next step for me was, being here in Dallas area, being, friendly with people in the media. I really developed a friendship with Shireen Williams, formerly of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, now with Pro Football Talk. And she introduced me to Cio Brocato, the legendary scout. He's one of the legends. Him and Gil Brandt, two legends right there. And he invented the three-cone drill. He was really he passed away a few years ago. But when I had a chance to meet him, and he was doing, his wife had just died. He wasn't doing too well health wise. And so, I would shadow him on, pro day visits and different things like that. Scouting events, learning, in my mind, just taking down notes furiously, just learning that experience. I learned a ton. And then there was a time when, one specific example I used is the year Andy Dalton was coming out. So that 2011 draft, he was not feeling well. So he lives in Arlington, wasn't feeling well, wanted me to go to TCU Pro Day for him and, kind of report back with, the times, observations, all the testing results, that kind of thing. And so he's still scouting for the Tennessee Titans at this point. So I did that and came back Arlington stopped at his house on the way back. And I go in and Gil Brandt sitting at the kitchen table with CO, and I walk in and say hi, and I kind of leaned off to the side, and I was a fly on the wall for about an hour, just listening to those two guys talk shop and just a wealth of information. It was really fascinating. But all these things, all these experiences, it goes back to you know, there's no right path to take. It was all back to my original goal of just put myself in as many situations to learn and get better and just, you know, try to, you know, get through that glass ceiling. And it's something that, you know, I have so many stories and things like that of experiences over the year that I think have, you know, really contributed to that overall scouting education I've been able to be a part of. And so it's, you know, like I think most people find out, you know, success in any field is not linear. And I mean, right now at this point, I don't consider myself necessarily successful in this. I still want to get better. I still want to, you know, continue to improve. And, you know, especially with scouting, if you're interested in scouting and you work at it, there should never be a point where you think, okay, I've got this figured out, because you never will.
No.
It's with the game of football, it's ever evolving. You're always trying to get better and try to adapt and try to find different things here and there. You're always trying to learn. And so, you know, that's just been kind of my goal throughout, you know, since college, and just continue trying to get better every day.
Well, listen, Zane, that's a great story, and it's an interesting one. And if you don't mind, as I'm listening to it for the first time, I would love to go back and maybe ask you about some of those stories you have share with specific people. Okay, good. Because, you know, for me, like, the first thing would be, you know, because scouting is, obviously, as you mentioned, is very much an entrepreneurial field on a certain level, just getting in. You have to have a level of entrepreneurial spirit to do this in the way that you described. So, but, you know, you have this chance to talk with John Dorsey and Schneider and the folks at the Packers, and you're at that interview. You know, to someone who's, you know, out there listening to this podcast thinking, I would like to be a scout, what kind of advice would you give someone if they were fortunate enough to work their way into an interview? You know, what are some things that you would recommend to them based on your experience in that interview and other interviews?
Even? Well, first of all, just confidence. I mean, even if you fake it, you know, just be confident. That's number one. But I'll be the first one to admit that I wasn't ready for that internship or for that experience. You know, it wasn't and nothing, you know, just being so young, I wasn't ready. I didn't have the experience necessary for it. And so, you know, it's funny, there was five or six of us who were interviewing for this position, and I thought I did well. I thought I did okay. And John Dorsey called me a couple of days later and said that, you know, they ranked everyone who interviewed. And I was interviewing with an assistant coach at Boston College. There was a guy that had just retired after like a 3 or 4 year NFL career. So, I mean, I was out of my league in terms of football experience. John Dorsey called me a couple of days later and said they ranked the six guys that interviewed, and I was number three. And I took that as a compliment, you know, my first, you know, interview, my first time. And I'll never forget it, because they put me in the tight ends room, the tight ends meeting room. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the wall, and there's a big, big, huge mural of Mark Shimura sitting right next to me. And it's just really, really interesting experience that I wasn't sure what to expect, but you know, it was a good experience for me. And that's why I encourage anybody, if you have a chance to go on an interview, I don't care what it's for, go on the interview. Even if you turn down the job, even if you're really not interested, having that experience in an interview process, you know, because you can only prepare so much. Sometimes there will be questions that throw you off. Sometimes, you know, just like anything. And in the game of football, everything during the week is about preparation, and you try to prepare for every scenario, but chances are there will be something on Sunday that you're not prepared for, that you have to make a decision on the fly. And so the more experience that you can get is really paramount. And then obviously in an interview like that, where this interview, I had to watch five different players, and I had to write a detailed scouting report on each. And then I had to deliver the scouting report to this room of all the scouts. Dorsey was the director of college scouting at that point, I believe. McKenzie and Schneider, this entire room of probably 2 dozen people, I had to present my findings. And I mean, talk about intimidating. It can be really, really tough, but the more experience you have, the more confidence you have in what you're doing, I mean, you're going to be better off. So, I'm trying to remember the players I had to watch. I mean, I think Ryan Grant was one of them. So they were all Packers players. So guys that, the room was obviously familiar with. So that's another I think, intimidation factor is these guys know these players like the back of their hand. You know of these players, obviously, but still to deliver a report that these guys, you know, they don't need the report. They know these players. So to deliver that report is pretty interesting. So just all around is an interesting experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about, you know, what are some things that you would be willing to share about what CO Brocato or, you know, had to share with you when you guys are out there watching together? What are some of the things you asked him? And, you know, I know that may be specific to certain positions or players, but maybe there are some things that are specific or even general, just kind of overarching themes about scouting that you got from him that you thought were really, you know, obviously I'm sure you thought everything was really valuable. Is there anything that stands out that you'd be willing to share that you thought was a great thing to be able to, you know, gain for people who were young, who were trying to get into this?
I think first and foremost is just the importance of self-evaluation. I mean, he stressed that, how, you know, it's great that you can evaluate other people, but can you evaluate yourself? And just like a player has strengths and weaknesses on the football field, what are your strengths and weaknesses as an evaluator, as a scout, as a person? You know, and then evaluating yourself, understanding where you might be need some work in some areas, and then working on those deficiencies. You know, whether it's, you know, in scouting, okay, you graded a player as a fringe NFL talent, he goes on to be a solid starter. Okay, what did you miss during the evaluation process that you need to apply to future reports and scouting? So it's something that self-evaluation is so key, and because that's the way you learn, that's the way you evolve. You learn from your mistakes. You cannot be afraid to make mistakes, because you will. It's inevitable. It's almost like you know, a baseball player at bat. He's going to fail probably 6 out of 10 times. You know, the really good players are going to fail 6 out of 10 times. If you reach base 4 out of 10 times, you're doing your job. You're doing more than what's expected of you, more than likely. So, you know, you're going to fail quite a bit, and you have to have that, you know, that mental toughness to, you know, come back and learn from it, and, you know, still come to the plate with the same type of confidence that you're going to reach base this time. And it's the same thing with scouting. You're going to miss on players, and you just have to figure out why. And so I think that's something that CO really stresses, that self-evaluation. And then I'll never forget when we were, I believe we were at A&M pro day, and he told me that it was so simple. It was, you can learn a lot just by observing. And that sounds like, who's the former Yankees catcher?
Yogi Berra?
Yogi Berra. Yeah, it sounds like a Yogi Berra saying, you know, you can learn a lot just by observing. Right. But it, as simple as that is, as elementary as it is, it's so true, because, you know, you can just be, you know, kind of like I was a fly on the wall listening to, you know, Gil and CO talk, you know, going to a pro day and just being a fly on the wall while a scout talks to a player, or see how the player interacts with his teammates, you know, watch them on the sideline, you know, watch them in the huddle. How do they interact? You know, and that, you can get yourself in trouble a little bit when you're trying to judge mannerisms and, you know, just, you know, the way they physically interact, that you can get yourself in trouble a little bit, just because you have to not overreact, but still take notes of things. But just how much you can really learn just by taking note of, you know, maybe, you know, when the cameras aren't on someone, or, you know, just the things, you know, those types of situations. I think those two things I really took away from CO as being things that I, you know, I knew already. I mean, I knew I needed to learn, or I needed to scout myself and get better, but just the importance that he placed on those two areas definitely helped.
That's very cool. And it's funny because, you know, I think the overwhelming theme maybe with people who do what we do on a certain level is, how much can you notice is the first thing. Like, how much, it's like playing that game of I Spy. It's like how, but like instead of it being one specific object, it's like, how much can you take in when you walk in a room at one moment? Like it's right. Like how many things. And I think that people who do this well, I just have a theory, and I want to see if it's right, and if it's not, then I'm just going to laugh and say it's just my own weirdness. But are you the type of person that when you walk into a room, whether you were at a work situation or at home, that if something is off from where it was I used to have people joke that at work that if I walked into a room, if something wasn't working right, it was definitely not going to work right when I walked into the room. Like, right. If there's something notable that was going on that I would tend to see it, even if I didn't mean to. It was like it would just show up. Like I had an employee who say that we were running some sort of program that had like this, it's like a belt. I worked in one area for about 15 years, but for about a year between working at a magazine as a magazine writer and editor and in an operations area, I took a job at the University of Georgia managing a mail room. And they did all these bulk mail jobs, you know. So they had like a conveyor belt with a program that, you know, labeled, you know, magazines. So we do jobs of like, you know, 30,000, you know, labels put on these magazines. So there's a program and all these things that you put out. And the employee I hired, I remember I walked in the room and to check on something. I'm with the project, and she goes, you know, you walk in, and if something I think is not working right, it's not going to work right when you walk in the room. And I just started laughing, because it's like the point of that is that it's almost like part of scouting is you kind of are able to, I think that there's something about building your eye to be able to notice things, whether right or wrong, you know, but it's that ability to notice things. And I wonder if you ever have that sense as well, where you like, you know, you may be out to dinner with your wife or something, and you point something out that you notice, and she's like, how did you see that?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's such an understated but important trait to have for an evaluator who pores over film. And I think you're spot on, and I'm similar. And I'll give you a specific example, actually. I've interviewed with several teams over the years, and one of my interviews was actually with the Patriots, 2011, I believe. And it went really well. It was a great experience. And I met how they did is they brought me through each room. First met with what's his name? The GM, not the GM, but the.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, as a casual fan, it's hard to know who like the people in the front office are, because all you think about is Belichick and Kraft.
Nick Caserio. Okay. Caserio, yeah. Former John Carroll guy. But, you know, meeting with him, and then it just in and out of each room. And I was in one of the rooms, and I remember I walked into the room and I sat down, and my back's to a whiteboard, and I'm facing the desk of the person I was talking with. And we're talking, he's kind of drilling me on certain questions about, the scouting process and things like that. And then out of nowhere, he said, just, you know, don't stare at my eyes. Don't look away from my eyes. You remember what was on the whiteboard when you walked in? And I said, yeah, it was Mark Sanchez, New York Jets. And when I walked in, I'm in the Patriots, facility. And I walk into a room and I see Mark Sanchez, New York Jets on the whiteboard. Right. So that was immediate alarm in my mind. Like, that's a little different. Or like, right. It wasn't game week. It was the off season. It was February at this point. So that threw something off on my, in my brain that's a little different. That's not. And so thankfully, that was something that helped me during that interview.
And that makes total sense. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just funny how that is. And then I think the other thing that you mentioned, obviously, that really, you know, so important is that self-evaluation. And for me, I can tell you, you know, there's some lessons I've been looking at lately, which is, for me, it's always been about how can I break something down further. And while, you know, because there's the micro and the macro of this, and it's like you talked about you talked about something that I would look at that's kind of like the macro, but you put it in micro terms as well, which was the whole going to bat example and you know, that you're going to strike out or you're going to fly out and you're not going to get hits, but you just got to get back onto that, into that plate and be as confident as you were before. And that, to me, that also speaks to the macro of that, you know, it's about maintaining a confidence level, but always learning and trying to keep a balance between figuring out what you're doing on a micro level to impact the macro level and keeping a balance with that. Like when you're noticing how people talk in the huddle and how they carry themselves, where you don't want to get too carried away with certain things, but at the same time, you want to find that right balance of figuring out what's important and taking in as much as you can. And it's like, for me, I think that comes down to when I'm building an evaluation process, you know, for like building my checklists and using things. I found that getting into as much detail as possible has helped me sort out which details I've found to have value and which ones that maybe not so much, or how to, you know, and I found like a good example is over the past probably 4 to 5 years, it's been, I remember when I first started doing quarterbacks, and, you know, I think if you want to, like, if you want to see every evaluator just kind of laugh at themselves, it's like when you first start evaluating a quarterback, because, you know, when you first start doing this and doing quarterback, because it's such a difficult position to evaluate. And for me, I remember my first checklists that I put in the rookie scouting portfolio, you know, pretty much were like, I had this, you know, when it came to processing information and making decisions, you know, I think I had like 5 things that I put down for like decision making. And I think quarterbacking is decision making. and the more I do this, the more things I have like of like granular level types of decisions that I want to fit into the whole. But it's like, I feel like as I've been doing this more and more, I'm literally, you know, writing down notes for like, okay, I may not be grading it this way officially for my publication, you know, but I'm going to be noting these, you know, 8 things that I have written down now in every grade, just to see how I can in the future build my checklist to make this work right. So like while I'm studying a player, I'm also kind of studying my evaluation and trying to figure out, this is how I'm doing it this year, this is how I'm experimenting with it for future years, so that I can make sure that that it feels right in terms of that it's working better. Like, because there's things you notice and you go, okay, you know, when I watched, you know, this player, I noticed that he did these things well, he didn't do these things well, but in the scheme of how he played, you know, the decisions that he made, maybe I put too much emphasis on one thing and not enough weight on another, you know, and how do I get it so that it fits for different types of players? Because you and I, obviously, we're grading for a very generic space. We're not grading for a West Coast team or, you know, an Earnhardt Perkins offense or, you know, or a spread. And so it's like, you have to kind of be generic enough, but at the same time, you have to account for enough things that you're kind of, you know, hitting all of that as well. So it's like, for me, I find that I'm literally, you know, I have spreadsheets that I use for, you know, going through my process of tracking information, but there's whole other columns of like, and sometimes even different spreadsheets where it's like no one ever sees, but there are things that I'm literally writing down like, okay, you know, this year, well, I've already got this year what I'm kind of experimenting with. For 2020, let's experiment with this, and this. So what are some valuable lessons for you? You know, for me, it's decision-making, kind of getting more granular for quarterbacks over the past few years. That's a good example. But what's a valuable lesson for you that you've been working on lately to kind of self-evaluate and get better as an evaluator?
Well, and it's a great subject to discuss in so many different ways. And I'm glad you mentioned a lot of things that you did, because it's so true. And, you know, there's no such thing as scouting genius. You know, it's all about just the details.
Right.
And understanding what to look for. And a lot of that is kind of like trial and error, kind of like what you're talking about. And, you know, I think a good example, I'm also big into barbecue and using my smoker and things like that. And I see, and I use that, those kind of techniques over in that realm, because if I'm doing a brisket, I have a notebook that I have all my, I list out every single step I take. And then, you know, everything from, you know, what seasoning I'm using to the weather outside when I'm smoking. And it's something that, because even the littlest little variable could be off this time compared to the next cook, and it'll change the final product. And so, you know, I cook a brisket at 225 degrees for, you know, 16 hours, whatever. The weather was this, the wind was this, but maybe, okay, it turned out okay, but I need to improve something. So next time I know to maybe switch and do maybe a little bit higher heat, but, you know, get the time down for the length of the cook, but maybe wrap at a different time, do it during the different weather. So there's so many variables, and that's so true in scouting. No matter the position, I mean, especially a quarterback, but no matter the position, it's all different. And I think for me, something that I've really been focusing on lately is, and this isn't a specific position necessarily, but just overall, the difference between evaluation and then valuation, and how it plays in your scouting. And kind of what I mean by that is, evaluation is what a player does, you know, breaking them down as a player. And kind of like what you were saying, you know, because we're not scouting for a 3-4 defense, or, you know, we're necessarily looking for an X wide receiver. We have to break them down just in generic terms, like this is what he would do best. So that's just the evaluation side of things. But then there's the valuation. You know, this player, he doesn't do this very good. He doesn't do this very good, but he does this really well. And so figuring out, okay, what kind of value is that? Because, you know, yeah, you're going to have these elite players like a Nick Bosa. And, I'd even consider Justin Herbert from Oregon in this realm where, you know, where he can do a lot of things extremely well. But you're also going to have more players that are missing certain traits that you wish they had, but they don't, but they help compensate in other areas.
And like, so Taylor Gabriel would be a good example of a player like that.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So how do you value what he does, his strengths as a player? How do you, because it's one thing to evaluate a player and recognize what he does and what he doesn't do well, but then valuing it at the next level. And that can be tough from our standpoint, because, we might hit exactly on a player in terms of evaluation, and even say in our report, okay, he needs to go to this type of offense and be used this type of way. But then he gets drafted by a team that misuses him, and, you know, our evaluation looks off. Well, it wasn't our evaluation that was off. It was, you know, where he went, the situation that he went, he wasn't valued in the correct way, or at least the way we saw it. And so, you know, that's where it might look like a bad pick on the surface, but when you look a little deeper, it wasn't. And so I think the difference between evaluation and valuation is key. And I think one example this past year, Jannard Avery with the Browns, a guy who I gave fourth, fifth round grade to because I wasn't sure, you know, I basically looked at him as a nickel rusher. I didn't think that he had what it took to stand up on a consistent basis as a middle, like a Mike linebacker. I think he struggles too much against the run to be an every down, pass rusher. But the Browns took him in the fifth round, and he's been one of the top performing rookies really because of the way that the Browns have used him as more of a rusher and pass in passing situations. So, you know, but if he was an every down player, he wouldn't be playing as well. But the fact that the Browns are using him in the right way, that's where I think I missed on Avery, is just the valuation part of it. I reread my evaluation on Jannard Avery, and I was like, I mean, this, I nailed him based on what we've seen so far at the NFL level. This is who he's been, but my valuation was off in terms of not only the draft pick, in terms of, you know, what grade you give him, is he a first round or second round or that, but what type of role he would have at the next level. So, and that's something I think we're going to be talking about quite a bit with this wide receiver group this year, in terms of the wide receiver prospects, because you look at this wide receiver prospects, there's not a lock top 20 pick among these guys. But if you look at picks 21 through 60, there's double digit wide receivers that I think are all closely rated. And yeah, it just depends on your evaluation and your valuation in terms of what they can do at the next level. I mean, a perfect example would be Marquise Brown from Oklahoma, who is 5'9", 170 pounds. And it just doesn't look like much, but he has blazing speed and he can be a home run anytime he touches the ball. And so how do you value him against maybe an A.J. Brown from Ole Miss, who is a natural route runner, a natural hand catcher, but a guy that's exclusively in the slot, who hasn't, you don't have tape of him facing press on the outside. Right. Now, you've seen him block, you've seen him get physical, you think he can do it, but it's a projection. And so it's really going to be interesting to see how evaluators, and then eventually we'll see how NFL teams value this class of wide receivers, assuming a lot of these juniors come out. There's just so many different flavors, type of wide receiver, from, you know, A.J. Brown, Marquise Brown, Arcega Whiteside at Stanford, Kelvin Harmon at NC State, Harry at Arizona State, Debo Samuel, South Carolina. There's so many wide receivers that I don't think will be viewed as top 20 guys, but in that late first, early to mid second round, we're just going to have a logjam of them. And it's going to be fun to see it play out.
No, absolutely. And I think that I love how you get into valuation versus evaluation, because I think that's where I think readers are probably don't understand the most, you know. That's is because the question I often get when I'm, you know, when a player that I've rated a certain way or scouted, they'll say, what did you miss, you know, about this player after they've been playing for like 4 weeks? And typically, you know, I find, you know, sometimes there'll be something that's very apparent and you go, yeah, I missed that. I flat out missed that player. But there are other examples where that are more often I look at it, and what I want to explain in depth is, listen, what I wrote about the player, you know, a good example of valuation versus evaluation would be David Johnson for me. Like, from the evaluation, I nailed it. Literally down to if he worked to begin his career in a scheme that ran more gap-oriented plays and was a scheme like what the Cardinals were using or the Colts were using, he could be an instant impact player, you know. But where I rated him was much lower than where, you know, than how he produced. But if you look at like what I wrote up about him, it was all there. Like, you go, if you read my evaluation, you go and you see David Johnson, you go, you didn't miss David Johnson at all. But in terms of how right, I valued him, it was like, I just don't know whether he's going to go to these specific teams and get a chance to run in this type of a scheme right away. And then learn as he goes. And, you know, he credited Chris Johnson for teaching him a good bit in terms of patience with zone running and being able to become a better zone runner. But at the beginning, it was like, you know, you run power, you run counter, you run toss, you run gap style, man style plays. And he was very good at that. But it's like, to be able to tell people, hey, it's from, you know, if you're looking to see if the accuracy of how someone describes a player and what his talents are and where he could get better or maybe areas where you think that might be difficult for him to learn and where his boundaries are and which ones are easier to push past and which ones are going to be harder for him to get better at. If that's good, it doesn't matter where the guy's ranked by a number, you know. But at the same time, if you're looking for, you know, were you right about how he's going to be in terms of, you know, valued in the draft? Well, that's a, you know, that's a different animal, you know, in terms of right, how he's going to be valued in the draft or how productive he's going to be. Well, you know, talk to me after where he gets drafted, you know, and which team he's going to be with. And I think that's why I kind of split my publications up, because I'm like, maybe for me, it's like, I'm more interested in the evaluation part, though the evaluation part in terms of for an NFL team is very important. But I know, you know, for me, it's, you know, this is kind of, I kind of know where I'm going to be and where my lane's going to be. So I'm staying in this lane and kind of doing some valuation with my work, but it's not, But it's in a different realm, you know. It has a different audience, but it's just fascinating for you to talk about that. So, you know, speaking of which, I mean, you just touched upon a number of, you know, fun wide receivers in this class. So, you know, what are some things that you would note for people that you think is important for them to understand about evaluating wide receiver play? For instance, for me, it's kind of like, recently, it's about keeping up with the changes of the NFL and understanding that, you know, certain teams are valuing different players. You know, the traditional, you know, X receiver, you know, the AJ Greens or the Julio Jones, the traditional big, tall, fast guy who goes up and wins it, that still can be very important for many teams and very valuable, but we're seeing more guys who can play inside and outside, like Cooper Kupp and Michael Thomas and Adam Thielen and, you know, and guys in that type of realm, and seeing how that's changed. So accounting for, like you said, those different positions within the wide receiver is very important. What else is important to you when you're watching this?
Yeah. And for me, I think, well, first, for each position, I have like 7 or 8 traits, you know, just specific traits that I look for at each position. And I break each position into 3 different tiers. And so for quarterback, for example, you know, it's first and foremost, accuracy, touch. That's number 1. 2 is mental processing. 3 is intangibles. Those are the first 3 things I really put a lot of stock into at quarterback. So the 3 most important traits for me, for quarterbacks, and then second tier and then third tier, there's 9 total. For wide receiver, my first tier, there's 1 trait, and that's pass catching skills. You know, what do you do at the catch point? You know, what's your catch radius like? And that's, I think, and this is a valuable exercise for anyone who's in scouting or anyone who wants to be in scouting. Sit down and you know, for each position, break down the traits that you look for. And then this is kind of what you were talking about, like really getting into the weeds and the details. Out of each of those traits, break it down further, breaking down, okay, you know, route running, and then breaking that down to how do they look out of the breaks and things like that. But make sure that you highlight the initial traits you're looking for that you go back to, because you don't want to lose sight of that. And sometimes it's easy to, when you get so far in the weeds of, you know, a quarterback's decision making. I mean, you kind of alluded to this earlier about, you know, breaking it down so closely and so detailed. I think sometimes you can even lose yes. sight of what the original thing you're looking for. And so when you're doing this exercise and you're doing all these subcategories, make sure you highlight that initial category, that initial trait. And if it's decision making for a quarterback, don't lose sight of that, because, as you know, you can get so far into the weeds that sometimes, you know, you just need to remember, hey, can a guy make good decisions? And it can be as simple as that. For wide receivers, can he catch the ball? And to me, that's number 1 thing on my list that is really important for me. You know, the next things that I look for, route athleticism and then route awareness. I think passing game savvy is so underrated. And a lot of those guys you mentioned, you know, your Adam Thielens, and, you know, they're able to be productive because of the way that they can set up defensive backs and create their own space, just being crafty at what they do. And that's not something that happens overnight or something that, you know, a lot of college guys have coming into the league. It takes time to develop that. And the guys that really understand, you know, how to close a cushion or how to stack a corner, mix up his gears in his routes, really sink his hips, stay collected when he's trying to, you know, explode out of his breaks. All these things can help you create your own separation. And guys that can separate, those are the guys that are going to get paid and be productive at the NFL level. So, you know, and that's why it's tough for rookie wide receivers, a lot of them, because they're not used to that at the college level. They're not used to facing press. They're not used to facing the caliber and the size of the athletes that are in the NFL at playing cornerback. So, you know, it's something that at wide receiver, you know, you can really get into the weeds, but I think you have to come back to just, can he catch the ball? Can he get open, and can he catch the ball? I think on the elementary terms, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, the best wide receivers in the league, that's what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the weed areas that I do think about a little bit lately that you talked about with catching the ball is even just tracking the ball. And can they track the ball in certain situations? Because that can also define how they're used. You know, like Sammy Coates, I think, had some issues tracking the ball. You know, there are other times that he could catch the ball well, but certain types of tracking were difficult, you know. And I heard a scout say this, a scout I know tell me this, in the sense that he had kind of this theory of that if a guy could, I don't know what kind of shooting it was, but it was kind of had to do with hunting. And like it was kind of a deal that applied to both quarterbacks throwing a deep ball and also wide receivers catching a ball over their head. But it had to do with the ability to, it was kind of the same skills that a hunter uses to shoot, like either skeet shoot or to track shoot, where there's a type of tracking involved with it, where you kind of you're shooting once and then shooting a second time to the next spot as you're kind of anticipating where the flight of the object is going to be. And he said that he found like that there was a very good correlation to that. And he found that it's anecdotal, but he said clearly, but he said it was interesting that in a lot of the data that he tracked and things that he did, that he found that quarterbacks who were good hunters, who like were hunters and like advocated that they were hunters, he would often look to how their deep game was. And he found that folks who were accomplished hunters tended to have and it was a specific type of hunting. Like they might even ask the question, like, what kind of hunting did you do? You know, cause if you're just like a deer hunter or hunt rabbit or game on the ground, it's one thing. But he said like, if there are people that kind of hunted aerial, you know, hunted birds that, you know, or did skeet shooting, he was always interested in that because he'd find that there's a pretty good correlation, even if it was anecdotal, to these, you know, to players who had a really good deep game, you know, had a good vertical game.
Yeah. So I love that. That's great.
Yeah. It's kind of fascinating. But yeah, I mean, so what about, you know, you talk about running back, we talked a little bit about, wide receiver, how about running back and tight end? What are some of the things that you're looking for there with those positions?
Well, the top two traits for my running back, I have 10 traits that I look for on my top tier. First and foremost, it's vision or instincts, just being able to read your blocks. We talk about decision-making so much with quarterbacks. Decision-making is so imperative for running backs. Being able to understand, you know, walk the fine line between being, you know, patient. And, you know, I hear a lot of people call running back patient, and I watch them, and I see indecisive. You know, it's one thing to, you know, wait for a block to happen, but you really have to maximize, you know, what's in front of you and understanding, okay, you know, if I'm a little more patient, it's going to hope, you know, something's going to spring open for me, or understanding, okay, this little sliver of daylight, that's the best I'm going to get. I'm going to hit it. And so it's such a fine line, and the really good running back can get it. They have that instinctive ability to understand what they're seeing. And then make that quick decision. And you don't have time to really think about it. You have to make a split second decision, even more, probably quicker than some quarterbacks have to make decision making. It's really important. I don't think it gets talked about enough. Part of that's anticipation, understanding that your blocker is going to get the job done, and you know, open that space for you. So it's just, that's a really important part of it. And then the number two trait on my top tier for running backs is contact balance, because as a running back, you're going to get hit, and it's just all about what you can do after being hit. Can you keep your feet? Are you tough enough? Are you strong enough? Do you just have, are you built a certain way where you can take on that contact, and still keep your feet underneath you and pick up yards after contact? And it's not, you know, power. I mean, Alvin Kamara has contact balance. You know, he can make guys miss, but he can also shrug off, you know, arm tackles at the same time. And so, can you spin out of tackle attempts? Can you be creative, you know, while defenders are, you know, have a beat on you? And, you know, it's just very few times are you going to have a 12, 15-yard run without being hit, you know, within the first 5 to 7 yards. And so the guys that can maximize those runs That's so vital. So for me, vision instincts is the top line, and then contact balance is number two for me.
Yeah, and I think it's great how you talk about it. And I think this is a good example of where you know, kind of getting as detailed as you can be helpful with seeing the overall, is definitely with what you discussed with vision. Because, you know, for instance, that decision making, I've found more and more that when you see whether a player is patient or indecisive and tentative, often has to do with, you know, what's going on around them. Is it, what's the down and distance situation? Is it right. A first and 10 or a third and four? Is it where are they in terms of field position and how the game is being played? What's the blocking scheme? What's the design of that play? And I think you start to see patterns emerge with players that when you're looking at things like, how do they understand certain schemes that they're running? Do they show the ability to set up blocks or the understanding of what the kind of the rules are for running with those schemes? Then you put it together with the situation in the game, and it starts to become more clear of, are they making the wise decision? Because as you said, it happens so fast. I mean, they mentioned it on a telecast on Sunday. You know, they asked Frank Gore about his ability to do what he's done for so long, and he goes, I just see flashes of color and I react to that, you know, and as we, right. You know, and we all know that Frank Gore, I mean, like, you know, I've been told, you know, I'm sure, even, I mean, scouts, I mean, coaches literally use his tape around the league as like examples of how to run certain types of schemes. Like, this is the guy that you use, which is where, like, I think the gap between, say, the media and people in football in terms of appreciating Frank Gore, there's a little bit of a gap there sometimes, because there are people like, oh, maybe he doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and other people like, he's a great back who should be, like, he's like a master craftsman at what he does. And there's obviously more to it than just the flashes of color, because it's the flashes of color come because he understands, you know, the different types of footwork that he needs to use and has refined that to react to that color. He understands what he should be doing on certain down and distance situations. He understands what he should be following and setting up on a power play versus a trap or versus a wham block or versus duo or versus, mm-hmm. you know, and or versus all these different things. So if you're like wanting to study running backs, you know, I would recommend to people as well as like, get a whiteboard and literally draw up what the plays look like. Like, learn the plays and understand where they're supposed to go and where they're not really supposed to go. And so that you can get an idea of certain plays that are the exception to the rule and that's okay. And other plays where you go, that's not exceptional under most any circumstance. You don't want to see that.
Right.
And here are guys who maybe they're great. You know, a good example was like Tevin Coleman. Tevin Coleman ran outside mm-hmm. zone. He ran wide zone in Indiana all day long. But if you look at the way that he performed, it was like, okay, well, there were like three carries against Ohio State where he went wild. And the rest of the time, some of the decisions he made were kind of wonky. So when he goes to Atlanta, you know, when he first starts out, they're playing wide zone, but he's not that good at wide zone as much as he was starting it. It was more, to me, it was like he was a great athlete and a very skilled runner on more gap man type of things where it's like, just hit that hole hard and just get downhill. And it was like, and he had enough success because he was so fast in a wide zone scheme that when he went to Atlanta, it was kind of hit or miss. And you started to see Kyle Shanahan even use gap plays at the end of the midway through the first year to give solely to him, because they were like, he doesn't quite have the patience to be a zone scheme runner yet. And he's gotten better at it over the years to the point that, you know, now it's like, oh yeah, he's just fine. He can run both and he's good at, he can do well in an outside zone scheme, but it took him a little bit longer, you know? And it's like, knowing those little differences can really help you, you know, evaluate and evaluate a player. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of my take on that. That's a
great example. As I said, one running back in this past draft class who I was really high on, who I thought did a really nice job in terms of, you know, walking the fine line between patience and decision making and understanding situations and what was needed was Kerryon Johnson at Auburn. And I thought he did a really good job of that in college. And I thought that would, so I gave him a late one, early second round grade just because I was that high on him as a player. He's also the toughest running back that I've ever evaluated. The guy just would not come off the field. But it was really just that patience and that ability to maximize each run. It didn't always look graceful. He had some of those longer legs, and it didn't always look pretty, but he managed to get the, maximize every run and understand the situation, allow the blocking to do their job, and then take advantage. So I Kerryon Johnson is a good example in this last draft class of that.
Yeah, I could totally agree with you on that one. And he's probably one of the higher-rated backs I've graded over the years. I mean, this was a great class as a whole, mm-hmm. and, for me, but it was – and he was one of the higher ones. I mean, I believe I had him third overall in my list of backs, and I was a little – at first, I hadn't watched him as much. I watched him a little bit later on as I started going through my process of guys – and so I was a little surprised by that when I came across, because you're going through so many names and so many players, that when I got to him later and I saw that, I was like, well, wow, okay, that's interesting, because I wouldn't have expected that. I mean, I knew he would be good,
sure.
But I was actually pleasantly surprised. How about tight end? To me, it's a funny position because it's, I feel like as far as if we're just looking at the four, these four positions that we've talked about, it's probably it's almost as difficult as quarterback in terms of because of the fact that pass protection and run blocking, is such a difficult transition from college to the NFL. And then on top of it, if you're going to be a tight end who's a productive tight end on the level of, it depends on the lens, of course, how you're looking at tight end. If you're going to say a tight end successful because he's a good run blocking tight end who fits with a certain team and he's not going to be asked to do anything more than run maybe some hook routes and some, shallow routes, then fine. But if you're looking for an all around tight end, a Rob Gronkowski type of player or a Travis Kelce, that's a difficult find, is to find a player who can do it all. So, I mean, talk to me about what you're looking for at that position.
Yeah, it could be tough, obviously, with the way certain teams use their tight ends. A lot of them primarily slot receivers, really. But not every tight end can be from Stanford or Iowa, where you still see a lot of, pro style. I use pro style loosely just because I'm not sure what pro style is anymore.
Right.
With what we're saying, but we do see a lot of offenses around college football still implement tight ends in line, hand on the ground, blocking. I don't know if it's maybe subsequently because of that, a couple of the top tight ends in the nation in college football are from those schools. Noah Fant and Hawkinson from Iowa, two of them. Caden Smith at Stanford, one of the best all-around tight ends in college football. But when I'm trying to watch these guys and figure out, okay, can they get the job done blocking, you're looking for the ability. And not every tight end, most tight ends at the college level aren't going to be able to sustain for a long period of time, but can they at least get the job done? It might not look pretty. They might not overwhelm the defender they're going up against, but can they at least stun and get the job done initially so the running back or, the quarterback has enough time to do their job? Can he get the job done on outside zone versus a defensive end versus a linebacker? Maybe he's best pinning, outside in blocks. Figuring out what type of blocking he's comfortable with, what type of blocking you've seen him do. If you've seen him do it a couple times on tape, okay, well, then you know that he's at least capable of doing it. It's not going to be a foreign language for him when he goes to the NFL. You're not going to find many tight ends who are truly assets in the run game, or at least I should say well-rounded tight ends who can be just as lethal down the field as a receiver who are also assets in the run game. But, it's they are out there. And so it can be tough to figure out them as a blocker just because of the way they're used in the college offense. But again, can you do enough? Can you hook a linebacker while you're in motion? Just a little hook can be enough to get enough room for your running back to clear that level and advance down the field. So, and I think, just along with that is just the competitive mentality. And a lot of guys are just kind of, the one pot daddies where they'll do the initial and then that's it. They're done. They can have no answer for a counter. They have, they fall off blocks. I mean, do you have the competitive mentality to stay in there, hang tough? You're going to get your butt beat, but at least you're doing your job and allowing the rest of the offense to function. So it can be tough, no question, with just the current slate of college football and in the NFL. But, tight ends still used as blockers in the league, and I'm not sure we're going to get away from that anytime soon. It's still important that you're scouting these guys for what they can do down the field, but it's important to, feature, can they do what would be asked of them on the line of scrimmage? And if they can, are they just able to get by? Do they have potential to be above average as blockers? So just trying to figure out all that is really important.
Yeah, no, that's great. So listen, just to wrap this up, I was going to ask you about a bunch of different players, but instead, just not to take up too much time, give me a player or two that's kind of on the radar for everybody that, you find really notable, whether he's going to graduate this year and be or declare for the draft, whether or not he is, it doesn't matter to me. I'm interested to see who you're interested in, and it could be at any position. And then also some people who are kind of under that media radar that have interested you as well.
I think he kind of qualifies for both in terms of guys I really like and still a little under the radar, but Zach Moss, running back from Utah, he's a junior. He's bulked up in the off season. I think he's up to over 220 pounds now, but he runs so angry. And you talk about contact balance. He's able to squirm out of tackle attempts. He runs with his feet on fire. He gets north-south quickly. He refuses to admit defeat as a runner. And he has, even though he doesn't look like the biggest guy, he has better power than you expect just because he has that solid core. He has solid hips, the body control that he runs with. So Zach Moss, hopefully, he's been banged up a little bit here. I believe ankle issues. So as long as he stays healthy and shows he can be durable, Zach Moss, to me, is definitely in that mix. A quarterback who I really like is Daniel Jones from Duke. I think he's starting to pick up, starting to gain some traction, I believe, what I've read from other evaluators. But coming into the year, he was my number fourth-rated quarterback. And where we are right now, mid-October, he's my third-rated quarterback for the upcoming class. He doesn't have that huge arm. I'd say it's just a tick above average, but it's not a great arm by any means, just in terms of arm strength and velocity. But it's what he does, just the mental approach that he has. He's very smart. I think the number one area where he needs to get better is eye manipulation. He needs to do a better job understanding, to look off the safety, not stare down his targets, things like that. But just watching him operate from the pocket is really fun. Pocket awareness, you see. He's a tough kid. He's mobile. He can move around. Very smart. I think he's accurate. Delivers a catchable ball. Gives off a Kirk Cousins type of vibe. And it's funny, when you watch him, he's obviously groomed by Coach Cutliff, who, longtime coach of the Mannings at Ole Miss in Tennessee. You see that some Manningisms with the way he moves, the way he pats the ball, his footwork, especially with play action. It looks like Peyton Manning. And I'm not comparing him to Peyton, but just some of the mannerisms in the pocket. You can tell he really studies the Mannings and then the Coach Cutliff influence, how that is a factor as well. So I think Daniel Jones, I don't think he's a top five pick. I don't think he's Justin Herbert, but a guy who I think can be a starter in the league and help you win games. I think he's on that trajectory. He's a redshirt junior. I think he's on pace to graduate in December, so there's a chance we could see him at the Senior Bowl if he declares. But I think he's a guy that is under the radar and isn't talked about enough.
This was awesome. I always get a I always get a kick out of getting a chance to talk shop with you, and I'm looking forward to hanging out and getting at least a chance for us to say hello before we get to work in Mobile. And, you know, I just want to, you know, thank you again, Dane, for coming on. You can follow Dane at DP Brugler on Twitter, and you can also find his work, obviously, at The Athletic, a terrific company that's doing great work, you know, in terms of sports journalism. So, Dane, thanks again.
Oh, anytime. Like I said, I always enjoy our conversations. And, yeah, look forward to Mobile catching up and talking some more there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for those of you who've enjoyed this RSP cast, you can check out more RSP casts at Matt Waldman's RSP cast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Blueberry. And you can also check out Matt Waldman's RSP.com or Matt Waldman, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. That has lots of information to different things from my YouTube channel, as well as, you know, work from guys like Mark Schofield and David Egono, and we got some stuff from Scott Bischoff coming up down the line, and a young man by the name of Jackson Block, who used to be a top-rated outside linebacker who had some several D1 offers but transitioned over to where he's working more, wanting to aspire to be a scout. I'm interested to see some of the work that's going to be coming up from him. So you can check out all that at mattwaldmanrsp.com. And thanks again for listening, and you guys have a good week.